Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Geek Roulette. I am one of your hosts, Mike Spriegel.
And I'm the other host, John Lundquist.
Hey guys, how you doing?
How are you doing, everybody? I'm doing good.
I'm not. I'm sick.
Yeah, that happens. Tis the season for being sick and feeling like crap.
I'm only at a tail end of a cold right now, though, so I'm...
Yeah, could be worse.
It could be worse. I mean, I don't know. Maybe. Could not be worse.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? Depends on who you are, I suppose.
Yeah, the worst part about a cold is really there's not much you can do for it. You can take medication, but you just got to really ride it out.
Tough it out. Drink your liquids.
Yeah.
It's good for you.
It is. So, this episode, we are going to be discussing a few different things. We're going to be talking about two premieres that came out this past week. The first being the Rick and Morty Season 4, which premiered on Sunday, and then The Mandalorian, which premiered on Tuesday.
Yes. Disney Plus goodness.
I would say that it has been an app that I've used extensively over the past day.
I didn't do much. The first thing I actually watched was a short, and then I watched the first episode of that Jeff Goldblum show, which was, okay. There's a mini review for you. And then I watched Mandalorian.
I watched The Mandalorian, and then I watched The Black Hole, and then I watched Tron Legacy. And
Black Hole's on there? That's right, I knew that. I think
that
I?
Is on there, nice. Yes.
Now I don't have to bother with trying to chase down the Blu-ray.
No, you don't.
Yeah, suck it, eBay.
Well, let's get through our housekeeping real quick here. Hey, follow us on Facebook. Go ahead and do Geek Roulette or at Geek Roulette on Twitter and say, hey, guys, you're doing swell. Or, hey, guys, we don't like you.
Yeah, we can take it. We're tough.
I'm not. I'm emotionally frail.
He does. I think he cries every time I leave him here.
I do, but I don't have Jen in town to bring me down, though. She's out of town for work.
Hey, both our wives are out of town for work.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute is right. Yours is in Vegas. Mine's in, like, Florida.
I think maybe they just took vacations and didn't want to take us with.
I wouldn't want to take me with.
Yeah, we're kind of tools.
Yeah, kind of. Let's kick into our recommendations. You want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. I will cheat, as you put it, when I told you what my recommendations are going to be. I recommend checking out Watchmen, the TV series, everybody on HBO.
It's not a cheat because it's not the episode.
Yeah. Hint, 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 people. But no, seriously though, it's good stuff. We will get into depth in that a little bit later. But it's good stuff. If you've watch the movie, if you're familiar with that world. I think even, I don't know, I'd be curious to see what somebody who has not read the comic book or seen the movie or is familiar with the property at all thinks of it, because I feel like there's a lot there that you kind of need to know. But again, we'll get to that later. Yeah, check out Watchmen if you have HBO available.
What do you mean by later? You mean by our next episode?
In like an hour or so, our time, and probably like a week, your time.
You can't talk about a next episode that I'm not going to release until next week.
Oh, dang it. Sneak preview, man.
No, you're destroying the illusion of magic of how podcasts
magic.
Are made.
Magic. We have time to get together every week, everybody, and we do it just for you.
Right. I fully neglect my children on a regular basis. Yes. My wife sits there alone and destitute.
And takes vacations without us.
Right. See, if you were to say that we were going to do a cheat, my recommendation is the Disney Plus app. That's how you cheat, John. You cheat by having to be on the actual episode you're going to be discussing something from.
We both have our own ways of cheating.
No, your way of cheating... As we've already discussed, I've already thoroughly gone through a lot of the app. The few complaints that have come out of the Disney Plus app is, one, The Simpsons for the early seasons are cropped and do not have the original ratios, which does cut off some of the gags. And you can definitely tell the beginning of the intro when you have the chalkboard scene, and you could definitely see where that's been cut out. The other thing is a weird change to Star Wars.
Yeah, I've read about that, although I have not gone back in and watched it myself.
I did. Apparently, now Han shoots first, but then Greedo says McClunky?
Something along those lines, then like explodes apparently.
No, it and doesn't it, explode, but
something like that. Have you heard the supposedly the reason why this happened?
I give up.
Apparently, this was because way back in the day, you might remember that they released a 3D version of The Phantom Menace, and the original plan was that they were going to go through and do that for all of the original six movies.
What, make Greedo explode and say McClunky?
In 3D. But The Phantom Menace in 3 didn't go over well because, it's The Phantom Menace, so go figure. So they kind of abandoned making the rest of them in 3D. However, George Lucas had apparently already cut, new versions for the other ones, and this is apparently from that cut, so that he, this new take on it is what he had made but never ended up getting released, so this is what got handed over to Disney, basically.
I will make a second quick recommendation. One podcast like The Follow, which is on the Ringer Network, is Binge Mode. They originally started as a podcast that reviewed every episode of Game of Thrones throughout every season, and then they moved on. They reviewed Harry Potter in all its different forms. They are currently right now going through Star Wars. They have already just gone through the prequel movies. They've already gone through Solo, and they just had an episode released yesterday where they went through Rogue One. And they're basically reviewing a lot of the Star Wars franchise leading up to the rise of Skywalker.
Talking's hard.
Well, as I said, I'm not healthy right now.
Yeah, you know, it's okay. We'll cut you some slack. Don't do it again.
Or what?
I don't know. Something will happen.
Oh, you're going to take over this magical computer and make all of this happen?
No.
Right.
I'm not.
That's right. So, yeah, give Binge Mode a listen because they have some amazing things. And there's some opinions of theirs that, you know, I, you know, definitely agree with. And one of them, like, they were talking about Rogue One. I agree. Rogue One is a lot better than people give credit for. Same with Solo. And it's a shame they're not making any more, I guess, anthology movies like that.
Yeah, that's probably a topic for another time, but I would agree. I think I like Solo more than most people do. I think it was just kind of a fun little movie. Rogue One was definitely cool, and both of them, I think, were different Star Wars movies than we've ever seen before, and Solo got kind of crapped on for that, whereas Rogue One generally gets praised a little bit more for it, but still doesn't get the love it deserves, I think.
Let's hit up arbitrary lists. For our arbitrary list, I submitted to John that I want to know what he felt was his top three favorites. Series premiere episodes.
Yeah, and this is a tricky one for a couple different reasons, actually. Because a lot of shows don't really hit their stride until like a season, sometimes two into their run. So like the premiere episode or pilot, if you will, ends up being a lot different than what makes the show great. Like, I mean, if you take like The Simpsons, for example, like it's a decent premiere episode, but not like nearly as good as what the show is known for. So I mean, like, that's not one I would count necessarily.
And that's why I chose this, because there's very few shows that hit the ground running very hard and fast right out of the gate, where they already have their good sense of identity and it captures you in. So I'll be curious to see what you say on this. What was one of yours?
I've got a few written down here. I've actually got more than three because there's several that I think work, but we'll see what you got. And if we have some doubles, I'll go with a couple of those. One obvious one is The Mandalorian, which I feel is a great season premiere, but again, kind of a cheat. And we'll get into that. But I won't count that one. I'll go with Battlestar Galactica for one of my first ones.
That is also on my list.
I feel it kind of came out of the gate running. You know, you see.
And by this, you mean the reimagining?
Yes, the 2004
miniseries.
Yeah, the 2000s one. It came out of the gate running. It was definitely different than, this is not your parents' Battlestar Galactica. I feel like it set up a lot of stuff in that first episode that would pay off later, that you might not figure out. And there was just, it was a great episode. It's one I haven't seen in a while. It's one I've been meaning to get back to Battlestar Galactica and watch it again because it's some good stuff. But Battlestar Galactica's premiere, I feel, set up the tone that I feel the rest of the series kind of maintained.
Well, I think the other thing it did is it exceeded so many different expectations, because I think with Battlestar Galactica, going into it, it was a reboot of the original late 70s series, which was a ripoff of Star Wars. And the late 70s series wasn't great. It wasn't bad, but it was kind of campy some ways.
It was decent sci-fi for its time. I remember watching it when I was a kid.
Right. So I have to think, that was one thing that might have been working against it. I think the second thing was working against Battlestar. It was on the Sci-Fi Network and the Sci-Fi Channel at that time. It wasn't like their production value, or they weren't doing bad programs, but they were doing the kind of programs you would expect to see on the Sci-Fi Network. I feel this is one of those programs that boost them up to the next level, where they said, hey, look, we're actually capable of putting out, top, grade material at this point.
And I would say even just cable TV in general wasn't really known for good quality shows. I mean, outside of, HBO and stuff like that, your general, cable networks didn't really have a whole lot going on for them. It was kind of like a second-tier network type thing, where it was a step down in quality from your main networks. And this, I think, kind of helped boost that up a little bit and, give cable networks a little bit more, credit in that area.
And I think the best thing that the Battlestar miniseries did is help encapsulate the overall view of what war is like on so many different ways, and the hard decisions that need to be made to you know, survive, especially when it's the survival of just humanity in general, and knowing that, hey, the war is a lost cause. Now it's just surviving at this point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had Battlestar on mine as well.
Nice. What's another one of yours?
So, another one I had, and this is one where I remember all the hype kind of being built up to it with the commercials, and ironically enough, it came out around the exact same time. And when I watched the pilot episode of this, I'm like, this is... I just need to know what's going on. I will say Lost. Lost's first two-part episode, it was basically just going from the whole crash of the plane on the beach to where everybody's running around frantically, where everybody's trying to figure out just all the weirdness of the island itself and the whole mystery of everything and what's going on. And I feel it was one of those perfect episodes that captured everybody's interest and attention just perfectly and helped give you a premiere of what was actually going to be such a very weird show in so many different ways. So I think Lost was one of those shows that did such an amazing job hitting the ground running.
Yeah, I would agree. I've seen the first handful of episodes, but it was one I never really got into all that much. That's another one that I kind of want to get back to, but just based on the mixed bag that the series ended up becoming, I'm kind of like, maybe I don't necessarily need to worry about it.
I would say this. I mean, if there was one thing Lost would suffer from, it's the opposite of what you said, is that I think the problem, you're right, it takes a while sometimes for a show to find its identity. I feel the show found its identity, but because it was a network show and their seasons were like 22 episodes long, that worked against them, because then you had those filler episodes.
Yeah.
So in the middle of the season is where things would sometimes drag a little, especially since all their episodes are focused on different characters each episode. So when you saw like, oh, not another Kate episode, or, oh no, not another, you know, this person episode, after a while, you know, that just started becoming a cliche in itself. But once you work past that, I feel the first season was good. The second season had its struggles because there was the Writers Guild strike that was around that time, which affected it. And there was... third season, I think, is where it really nailed it. And I think that third season finale is one of the best finales you could have in a season, where really it was a huge gut punch. From there, I think you could tell that they were winging it. It wasn't bad, but it was still good enough to work.
Right. My next one I'm going with is actually the Walking Dead premiere, which, as much hate as like the second season of that goes, I feel like the first season's pretty good. And the season premiere, I feel, is just kind of encapsulated what the Walking Dead comic book was and kind of what you really hoped that the TV show could be. It had nice, genuinely, you know, kind of suspenseful moments. I remember one part when Rick's leaving the hospital and he's going through this dark stairwell and you can kind of hear things. You're not sure what's going on. It was just done really well. And, you know, the characterization is done pretty good in there. And the whole, just that first episode, I feel kind of really encapsulated. I remember watching that and be like, you know, having hope that, okay, this is going to be the Walking Dead TV show that we wanted. I think, for as much, like I said, bad, you know, mojo as that second season gets, you know, I feel like it kind of started off good, and I feel it had its moments, even though it struggled later on, but I feel like that first episode was pretty solid.
I would say the first episode was good. I'd say that first season, which was like only, what, a 6-8 episode season, if I remember correctly, they were already hitting the filler department. And I think the biggest problem was is early on, AMC gave them such a low budget to work with. Yeah. And that was what Frank Darabont's issue was during the entire second season, was that, hey, give me a budget. No, we don't want to, but hey, that's a popular show. The first season, I think you're right. The first episode did feel like a good recreation of the first issue of the comic itself. I would say it kind of went off the rails a little bit more as time went on.
Yeah, but later that season, like when they get to the CDC, I think it took a definite downturn.
Even before that, the Votto Grandma.
Oh, yeah. Good old Votto Grandma. I forgot about her.
You forgot about Votto Granny?
Yeah.
Yep. So I would say it's good. I wouldn't put it in my top three, but I can see where it can maybe be a top 10, top 20. So.
Yes. What's your next one?
Well, my next and last one, same network. Different show. Once again, I was watching and I was hearing about a weird premise. And the whole premise was, hey, what if we took the dad from Malcolm in the Middle and we had him in a show where he was terminally ill and he was making meth to try to make money before he, you know, succumbed to his illness. And the premise itself seemed weird enough. And watching the first episode, once again, I think it was one of those episodes that was great because you would never assume that Bryan Cranston had that ability to play Walter White the way he did. If you ever watched Malcolm in the Middle, you're like, he's this funny guy, but what could he do? And then when you saw what he could do, I feel that that whole premise right there did a great job of introducing all your key, you know, element characters in the show. And those characters would grow as the show went on, but that was definitely a show like, all right, I have to see how this goes through, because the best part about the first season of Breaking Bad is that Walt's a train wreck. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing, but he's still trying to do it. It's just an interesting twist of that, you know, if you knew your time was limited, what would you do to support your family? So
you go to the extremes, apparently.
Right. So I felt that Breaking Bad did an amazing job of hitting the ground right off the bat.
Yes, that's definitely a good call. Breaking Bad is good stuff. For my last one, I'm going to go with Arrested Development, actually. I feel like that was kind of a show, I feel like, where they kind of knew what they wanted to do with it. They knew the tone that they wanted. You know, Ron Howard's narration of it, the characters were all, you know, right there in that first episode. That's one of those, you know, it didn't struggle at all with the first season and, you know, first couple seasons finding its footing like a lot of shows did. The later ones, maybe, you might argue, did. But I feel like that first season, that first episode, you know, it kind of took off running, and it was, you know, just that different sense of humor that you didn't really see on network TV at the time was right there. And the characters were all, you know, kind of, I wouldn't say fully formed necessarily, but they were definitely, you know, pretty still the same character that they were later on. I think that's just a good, solid, nice, and especially with sitcoms, I feel especially hard to hit with that, you know, get the tone right off the bat.
Well, when you have a 22-minute episode to introduce, what, about a dozen different characters and get the core element, they did a great job. I feel the first episode's good. I feel the second episode, I believe that's the banana stand episode. The banana stand episode, I think, is what sealed it. The first episode was good, but there's always money in the banana stand.
There's always money in the banana stand, unless you burn it down.
Right. No touching. All right. So let's move on to the first of the two reviews we're going to talk about. First up, let's talk Rick and Morty. Now, before talking about the season 4 premiere, quick recap. I mean, your first season, it almost felt like a weird parody of Back to the Future and the relationship of, you know, and that's what almost, you know, was kind of intended between, like, Doc and Marty, except it was Morty and, you know, Rick. And it was just these weird, wacky, zany adventures, and there wasn't as much of mythology in the first season itself until you started getting near the end. And then when you got near the end, you started to, you know, seeing some of the elements which were of that of a larger picture itself, or, you know, how, you know, Rick, his depression was affecting him. You get to the second season. The second season was definitely where a lot of mythology was made, where you have the introduction of the Council of Ricks. You have, you know, the entire Galactic, you know, Federation. You have all these different elements, and you find out near at the season finale that Rick is actually an outlaw, and, you know, he was part of a group that was imposing the Federation, which you get to the season 3. You have season 3 where Rick destroys the Federation and a lot of the Council of Ricks, and then from there is gained dominance because he's convinced his wife, or positioned Beth in the position where Jerry has now been kicked out of the house and he's not there. But yeah, in that season, he gets, you know, back, and the whole fourth season dynamic is about adjusting to what the new status quo is, I would say, where they're trying to become a family again, but Rick doesn't know how to handle or deal with that.
Yeah, I think the first few seasons, I feel like Rick is definitely kind of the driving force in the family and what's going on. And at the end of the season 3, and this, you know, this first episode here at least, you know, Rick's definitely kind of adjusting to, you know, okay, now the family is definitely the bigger force here, and he's almost having to take a back seat to that, and he's kind of adjusting to that and, you know, how he's going to cope with that, and, you know, and the rest of the family too.
Yeah, the big dynamic is that Rick coming back in their lives, Beth, you know, wants Rick around because she wants her dad, and because of that, you know, and because of how Jerry is such a passive individual, Jerry, you know, was somebody at Rick absolutely hated him, you know, did everything he could to make his life miserable. And then there's the adventures that you have with Morty. As the seasons progressed, too, the other big difference was how Summer was becoming a more integral part of the adventures as well. And it wasn't just Rick and Morty, it was Rick and Morty and Summer. So now you have the premiere. With the premiere, there, you know, you have it where Beth is clearly setting up boundaries that Rick just can't take Morty on an adventure. He has to see if Morty wants to be a willing participant. And
Yeah, and I'll be curious to see how that, you know, at some point that's going to go out the window and there's going to be some big blow up at some point. You know, maybe that's the, because I think we're only getting half of the season at first, right?
5 episodes first, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe at the end of the 5th episode, something's going to happen. He's going to blow up and, you know, quite possibly literally, and, you know, the status quo might change a little bit. Or that's where the conflict I can see is maybe going to come in.
Well, and this is what I'll address. It's something I have tab to talk about later in our, you know, notes here and everything, but you're talking a show that's going to be 5 more seasons. So I think, though, the whole thing you have to get in perspective is that you now have to change this where it's not a race to try to have as many hitting episodes as possible. It's now more of a marathon where you have a longer game at play. So if you know there's 5 more seasons, unless they break the contract or get released from it at this point, you know,
it's a lot of TV.
It's a lot of TV to have on there,
especially in this day and age.
Exactly. So going back to a status quo, I guess the question is does there have to be conflict or are there newer elements brought into it? I think the thing that some people I saw some reviews people hate about this episode was that they said that albeit it was a funny episode, you could also see where things were playing it safe. And they, you know, you talked to Harmon was saying that with this episode, you didn't have to watch the previous seasons to understand what was going on in this. I can see that from a perspective too. I think one thing that some people are saying is this, is that they were afraid the show was going to become like a whole rolling series of like callback jokes where like, hey, we've done all these things in the past that are funny, so we're just going to always keep calling back to them. And like, I'll use a good example. Like one show I liked was The League on FX. It was a funny show, but as the show went on, it stopped being funny because it wasn't doing anything original. Instead, hey, this joke worked in the past. We're just going to kind of do like a callback to that joke, or we'll call back to this line. And it then became like a whole series of catchphrases instead of jokes. And I think that worked heavily against it.
Yeah, and I think Rick and Morty definitely has a danger of falling into that. I mean, you know, there's so many catchphrases and, you know, one-liners and, you know, inside jokes, if you want to call it that, you know, that they could and occasionally do, you know, call back to, and I think that's, you know, hopefully not a crutch they end up using for the next, you know, 5 seasons or so that we get of this.
Well, and this episode brought back one of my favorite characters from the first season, Mr. Meeseeks.
Yes.
And in an article or interview about it, they said the reason that they didn't bring back Meeseeks earlier, they thought about it, but it was because they wanted to avoid that, once again, that whole paradigm of like, we're just going to call back to what was funny instead of doing something funny, original. It says, yeah, if it's something that makes sense for the story, we're going to do it. You know, bringing them back, I think, was an amusing aspect that, hey, it's there. Because you don't have something like a Meeseeks box and not go back to ever using that. I feel that, you know, that was a funny and clever use. The Kirkland Meeseeks box was probably one of my favorite jokes possible right there.
Yeah.
But I would say the whole episode was based between two separate adventures. It was essentially, you know, the premise is that Rick and Morty go on an adventure. They're going getting these items called death crystals, which can let you see how you're going to die if you have it in contact with yourself. Well, Morty envisions an entire dream, like a vision of him dying of old age with his girl he has a crush on, Jessica, and he decides to forgo whatever his Rick needs are, just try to pursue that one dream.
Yeah, he's just going to follow the crystal. Like, it starts out with him walking in different, holding the crystal and walking in different directions to, you know, kind of like tune it, basically, so that his life, and he ends up going through all these different, you know, Rick ends up dying, and
Rick dies, and as they die, they kind of linger on a little, and then basically you find out that there is a protocol for when Rick dies, where a hologram tries to instruct how to bring him back. But then there's a backup protocol where if he's not revived, he goes to a cloning vat, except the cloning vat that's in his current dimension is broken and gone, so...
Yeah, and I feel like this was one of the better gags in the show where he kept going to different, you know, I mean, over the course of the show, he ends up going through multiple clones, and, you know, the main gag with that is he ends up in all these different fascist type of, you know, governments and worlds or universes, whatever you want to call it. You know, and there's a pretty good gag there, I feel, but that's kind of Rick's plot as he's trying to get back to his universe, I suppose, and the Morty and everything, and figure out, you know, and get back to his life, but he ends up, you know, in a shrimp body and in a whatever, and all these different crazy timelines and universes.
Yeah, I would say that between the two different storylines, the Rick one, I feel, is the more consistently funny one. The payoff to the Morty one, though, I like the payoff to the Morty one better. And the reason for that is that, hang on.
Darn, see that cold.
That cold. It's going to get me every time.
Yes.
I think the reason I like the payoff better to the Morty one is that if you knew how everything ended, and you're working towards the end, you fail to realize what you have good that's in front of you sometimes until you get to that point. So the running joke is that he sets this up to try to get this perfect thing, and Jessica, you know, hits on him and says, hey, we're going to all go skinny dipping, but because the crystal says that, nope, by doing that, he's not going to, you know, die old with her, he comes to the realization, well, maybe we reconnect later in life. And yeah, maybe that was ultimately how he was going to, you know, die old with her. It doesn't mean he was going to spend his whole life with her, though. And
yeah. And did you stick around to the end credit to get the ultimate payoff of that whole thing?
Yes.
Yeah. Which is just the bittersweetness of the whole thing, where you find out she's not, because the vision he has is she's like over his dying body, and she's like, Morty, I love you, or something, or whatever. And at the end of the episode, you find out that she has this dream to be somebody who takes care of old people, and she's like, I just want to look at them in their eyes in their final moments and say their name over and over again and how much I love them. And, you know, so you find out that, yeah, this whole thing he's been working for is not exactly what he thought it was in the first place.
Right. It's how much control do you truly have over your destiny? And that was, and even, you know, Rick realizes, you know, as he comes across the bee version or wasp version of his family and everything, is there is value and merit in the family, and that trying to chase what you used to have sometimes makes you not see what you already have in some ways. So highlights of the episode, I would say Hologram Rick, great addition to the entire, you know, aspect.
Yeah. Yes. And yeah. Another, you know, version of Rick that, you know, among all the other ones we've gotten, he was pretty solid. Like I said, I already said, I think the Rick aspect was better. I think I did like the callback when they kind of acknowledge, you know, Morty kind of going on a, what they call it, an Akira-like rampage, which is something that not everybody's going to get. So it was a nice little nerd nod there for some people.
I thought it was an amusing thing where, since you're trying to make it look like you're going back to the original status quo of just Morty and Rick doing adventures, when you have Summer lingering around at the end, and like, go away, Summer. It's kind of almost like, yeah, you're not going to be part of the adventures anymore. We're going to be going back to the way it used to be. But, you know, it's an interesting thing right there. We're like, all right, it's a clean start. You know, it's not going to stay clean.
No, yeah, it's going to, yeah, it'll get shifted up a bit.
Right, because, I mean, you look at open plots, threads from the previous seasons that they still have yet to address. You still have the evil Morty that you still have to address. You still have the cybernetic Birdman from, you know, that was captured by the Federation of Planets.
Yeah.
You have those things to play off. Lowlights, I don't think, as I said, there's necessarily a lowlight. I think as a premiere episode, it's weird to say this, but it's almost like what I would consider a palate cleansing episode, where it's like, you know what? You've gone through three episodes now. We're going to have you go through this episode just to kind of just clean you up and just make the whole thing a little bit cleaner.
Yeah. For me, like, it was a good episode of Rick and Morty, but I didn't feel like it was a great or one, like a standout one, you know, not necessarily one I would think you'd want to lead off a season with, but, you know, not bad. It was good. You should watch it. It's, you know, it's fine. It's not like a bad episode of Rick and Morty, but it's just not great.
Right. I think that's where I agree there. And that's why, as I said, I want to say the term palate cleanser, where it's something, it's a refreshing episode where you see some familiar elements, you see things, new things being addressed, but you also realize that, and this goes, you know, I'll touch on what I was mentioning earlier, is what's the long game? You got five seasons on tap. how does a show sustain itself for five seasons and stay fresh without repeating recycling things? So having an episode like this, I don't mind, because you realize that you got time. It's impossible to hit a home run with every single episode. When you look at what Rick and Morty has done in the previous three seasons, there's only a few episodes I would say would be clunkers out of those three.
Yeah, and I think Rick and Morty, I feel, unlike most shows, does the fill-in episode better than most do. I feel like it's fill-in, you know, quote-unquote fill-in episodes tend to be a lot better, a lot more varied. You know, the interdimensional cable episodes
or Morty mind blowers.
You know, yeah, I mean, I feel like they can, with their format alone, there's even stuff that, you know, we probably have no idea that they have in the pipeline for fill-in episodes that, you know, that are going to do something completely different. So I feel like, you know, they've probably got something in mind for these five seasons. I hope they've got some kind of roadmap, and they're just like, oh, we got five seasons. Let's figure it out as we go. You know, I hope, you know, they've got it like broken down. Okay, this is where we want to be at the end of season four or five, six, you know, and going forward. But we'll see, I suppose.
Well, I think the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that at the end of the first season was when they were having a party and, you know, Morty realized about Rick, you know, trying to get past his depression. The season two premiere immediately followed that episode, because that's where they had the party and they had to clean up. They froze time, and then they had the whole time issue. You had the season two finale where they're running from the Federation until they turn in, and then you get the premiere where it's, albeit not immediately after, deals with the repercussion of that. The fourth, you know, third season ending was more or less, you know, Jerry getting back with Beth and Beth wanting to, you know, be a family again, and Rick just accepting that he's going to have to, you know, just deal and tolerate with what's going on. So you once again have a little bit of a continuation of that where, yes, you have it where he sees how he deals it, but it's maybe a healthier outcome that we wouldn't have gotten in the past with other episodes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll be, you know, good start, and I'll be curious to see where they take this season and the next five.
Right, because I don't think you can have it where Rick is mad and depressed all the time. At some point, you'd like to think that Rick has the ability to find happiness, and maybe that's the setup. He finds happiness, and something takes it away.
Yeah, that could very well be.
So, let's move on to the Mandalorian.
Dun, dun, dun.
So, there was a lot of hype built up on this.
Oh, yes.
There's been a lot of good reviews I've seen on it. There's things I've seen people quibble about, and I don't know, we can address some of that down the line here, but overall, the timeline, let's look at what the timeline of this is. This takes place 5 years after Return of the Jedi, but 12 years before the events of
Force Awakens.
So it's kind of a show that in some ways has been explained how the First Order, the Empire survives, and maybe how the First Order begins. You know, and if it does those elements, it's fine. I think I've always liked the fact that with Star Wars, there's always been a grim, gritty, underside of their universe.
Yeah, I think that's one thing I know people kind of had quibbles with the prequel compared to the original trilogy. Was the original trilogy was this kind of dirty, grimy, you know, all the ships looked very well used, and there have been explanations for that, whereas the prequel stuff looked all brand new and shiny and sparkly and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, it's nice to see him go into these bars, and, you know, I mean, when you see the stormtroopers and they show up later, their armor is all kind of just in disrepair and dirty because, you know, because the Empire hasn't been a thing for 5 years or so. But it's kind of cool to see, yeah, the seedy underbelly, so to speak, of Star Wars.
And I think that seedy underbelly has always been there, and it's always been an ongoing, recurrent theme, even in the prequels. Because the prequels, you have places like Tatooine, where you have slaves, as an example, and it happens because it's on the Outer Rim. And, you know, you have those same elements, you know, even in, Attack of the Clones, where you see that there's bounty hunter syndicates and things, and even the Clone Wars show addressed a lot of this with some of the.
They touch on it in the movies here and there. They get into it a little bit more in the, you know, the Clone Wars TV show, but I feel like we're going to get a lot bigger dose of it here with this, and so far it's off to a good start, I think.
Yeah, I think the one thing I like acknowledging with a show like this is that it doesn't matter if you have an empire, it doesn't matter if you have a republic. The world is such a vast and large place that there's always going to be crooked things going on that can never get policed, no matter how much the government tries to do so.
Yeah.
And that's why it's nice to see what the dark side of the whole world is like. So, with The Mandalorian, what would you say seems to be the theme of the show one episode in?
It's tough to say. I mean, they definitely touch on the fact that he's, you know, a foundling, which I assume means, like, you know, he's an orphan. When he goes back to, I don't know, what was that place where where they smith him a new piece of armor? Was that? That wasn't on Mandalore, obviously, but
I don't think it was. I have to look what that up.
But yeah, it was some kind of weird, you know, but I don't know. It's hard to say what the theme of this episode was. I mean, I think it was a lot of table setting.
I agree.
But not in a completely obvious hitting you over the head type of way. Like, you get glimpses of his character, but not, you know, again, not hitting you over the head with it. I feel like, you know, you get to see his mannerisms, the way he acts. I feel like he does have, you know, especially right at the end, you can tell he's got, you know, maybe a heart of gold, as people like to say. You know, he's a bounty hunter with a heart of gold, you know. So I think that'll be something that'll be develop as the season goes on.
I would say that my opinion of what the show was about changed while watching it. I feel that early on, it's like, all right, it's about a guy that's a bounty hunter. But then you get to the Mandalorian aspects of it, and it's like, no, it's about the Mandalorians maybe trying to recapture their culture and rebuild what they used to be. And from there, you know, him trying to earn his way in his, you know, in the world and trying to become a better warrior. Then, you know, shifts to him taking the job from what seems to be, you know, the former elements of the Empire itself to find, you know, this individual. And then you see when he finds the individual itself, it becomes now an entirely different thing. You're right. It kind of implies that, hey, maybe this wasn't what he signed up for and everything. And
yeah, and you touched on something, too. I feel like something else that kind of goes on a little bit in the background is it kind of sets up a Mandalorian mythology almost. Like, there's, you know, they're very clan-like. They, you know, because you get when he goes to get his piece of armor, you know, she's talking about, you know, how this will be good for the clan. It'll help the, you know, I forget exactly what word she uses. But basically how it's going to be good for, like, the Mandalorian people. And then later on when he's trying to tame that, was it a Blarg or whatever it's called? You know, the one guy says, you know, Nick Nolte's character says, you know, true Mandalorian, they used to do this and that. And, you know, and that's when he kind of goes back and he, you know, he realizes that, yes, I can. And
it's funny because that reference is a reference to the Star Wars holiday special where the Boba Fett in cartoons riding a dinosaur.
Yes, and has the same weapon that he has even.
Yep. You know, so yeah, it's an interesting show where it's definitely done a lot. I would say this, it's done a lot with what less that it's been in the show itself. I think Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni, who's, you know, both, you know, very well-seasoned individuals, understand that you don't have to over exposition to help explain everything. Let the world breathe. Let it show itself. It does a good job there in that sense. I feel the action scene's amazing. There was a lot of practical effects that were used in the show, and
yeah, and I feel like it even had some nice start. You know, the Star Wars humor was there, too, I feel like, when he gets that speeder, and he's like, you know, the one guy brings it up, and he's got a droid pilot, and he says, no droid, which I will be curious to see if they kind of touch on that, like, why he doesn't trust droids. You know, maybe it's just a bounty hunter thing. But then, you know, he's like, okay, if you don't want droids, then this other speeder comes up, which has Brian Posehn piloting it, but it's just this hunk of junk that's barely being held together. But he's like, okay, that's better. But, you know, when that pulls up, that's definitely kind of a laugh moment. You know, and plus that, just that fish guy in the beginning was kind of, I feel, supposed to be a joke. And I mean, he's kind of, one of my quibbles is he's kind of feels a little out of place.
I would say that it was something that some people did argue, that Horatio Sanz's character, the blue alien in the beginning, was definitely a little bit more out of place. But then again, you have to ask yourself, what is in place in the Star Wars universe? You know, we all know those guys that are dumb and say stupid jokes at times when you really shouldn't be saying stupid jokes or, you know, trying to be lighthearted about things like that. So, highlights of the episode for you?
I think the action was really well done. The action was great. I thought the music was also really good. It was not like any Star Wars music we've done before. It's done by, and I forget his name, but it's the guy who did the Black Panther score. And it's driving me nuts now, but I feel like that was
hang on
well.
A second.
Hey, Google.
Who did the Black Panther score?
Dun, dun, dun. Go technology. Google is failing us.
Hey, Google. Who did the Black Panther score?
We are not endorsed by Google.
According to Wikipedia, the soundtrack for the 2018 American superhero film Black Panther, based on the Marvel Comics character of the same name and produced by Marvel Studios, consists of an original score composed by Ludwig Göransson and original songs produced by Kendrick Lamar.
Yes, that for, yeah, Ludwig Göransson, it was, and that score in and of itself, the Black Panther score is really great, and I feel like he did a good job here, like, keeping it still sounding like Star Wars, but also not, you know, it kind of had a different, you know, like, a Western vibe, which is episode in itself very much had, like, kind of a spaghetti Western feel to it.
So I've had a few people reference this, that this could, like, The Mandalorian could end up being just, like, Lone Wolf and Cub, which is, like, a comic book where it's about...
Yeah. Yeah, about a bounty hunter who basically comes across a kid and keeps him with them.
Yep. Which, you know, a lot of... It was funny, some people are commenting, how come they've not done this in a Star Wars universe before, you know, where you have a story like this, but that's because, hey, sometimes it takes a while for stories to come along. I would say, for me, highlights definitely the, you know, the combat scenes were just all perfectly done. I like... One thing people hated, they hated the whole, like, him trying to learn how to ride the Blarg. I like that, and I like it for one reason. It shows that he's not in God mode. He's not a video game character that's maxed out. Here's a character that does have limitations, does have weaknesses. I think about Boba Fett. Like, when we saw Boba Fett, he's like, this guy's badass. And he's like, oh, man, what's Boba Fett going to do? Oh, he got hit with a stick and flew into a barge and got eaten by the Sarlacc pit.
Yeah, I've never been a big Boba Fett guy, but I would agree. I mean, and I feel like there are a few other times where you get the feeling like, you know, he's good, but he's definitely not infallible. He can't do anything, you know, everything and everything at, you know, perfection every time.
He's not, maybe the best way to put it is this, is that he's the Mandalorian, but he's not John Wick, where John Wick, you know, can pull off all these amazingly, you know, well, you know, thought out plans and... Hey, you know what? Sometimes that's not always going to happen. One thing I loved was seeing Salacious Crumb on his spit.
Yeah, that was pretty nice. I remember being kind of surprised when they cut right to that, basically, where it's a, you know, Corakian something monkey, you know, turning on a spit like a, you know, like a chicken or something like that. And then there's another one sitting in a cage, right, kind of like watching his, you know, roasting friend sitting there. That was kind of some of that, you know, darker Star Wars humor. I mean, that bit was good. I also did like the bit, getting back to the humor part that I just remember now, was when IG-11 had, the, you know, kept, basically like at the drop of a hat, kept wanting to self-destruct, like initiating self-destruct sequence, and then man, like, no, don't do, what are you doing? Like four times, that part was pretty good.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it was just good. And I think the one thing I also like too is that you had a lot of, you know, well-known actors. Werner Herzog was in there. You had
Carl Weathers,
Nick Nolte, but you saw these actors, and I don't feel any of them were over the top. Where it's like, oh man, this.
No,
just
it didn't. Yeah, I think a lot of times when you get known actors like that, it tends to be like, oh my God, there's, you know, and it's, you see that actor and you don't see the character they're portraying instead, you know. And I feel like this time when Werner Herzog showed up, you didn't think, you know, oh, there's Werner Herzog. You just thought, you know, there's a grizzled Empire commander who's, you know, kind of hiding out and trying to get things done. I feel the best part of the thing of this whole episode is that it was light. It was something you could kind of watch. I mean, in, you know, in one way, it's only 40 minutes long, but at the same time, there was a lot happening and a lot going on and a lot to digest, I feel, at the same time.
It's building of a world. It's something like, here's a side of Star Wars that you've kind of always been alluded to, but now we're going to show you it. And, you know, for lowlights, I can't think of anything right now that would be something that would be a deal breaker for me right there. I feel the show unfolded the way it needed to unfold to get to where you needed to at the end. Now, talking about the ending here, let's say this. If you haven't seen it, go watch it.
We've kind of been talking minor spoilers, but nothing super grave. But yes, the
ending.
Spoiler warning if you're still here now.
Right. Tune out now. Don't listen to the rest of this episode. You were warned.
Yes.
So what the Mandalorian was assigned to bring back, you know, even, you know, it was like, hey, this is supposed to be a 50-year-old person, but it's like in a cradle. And the reason why is because...
It's Yoda and Yaddle's love child.
It's not Yoda and Yaddle's love child.
It could be.
What species is Yoda?
I don't think it's never actually said which species he is. He's always been kind of shrouded in mystery, even in the old expanded universe, you know, stuff that is now not exist anymore.
Hey, Google, what species is Yoda?
Welcome to our third host, everybody. She's thinking. See, because it's not
No, because
there.
He started talking right away. Hey, Google, what species is Yoda?
According to Wikipedia, Yoda's race and home world have not been named
See?
In any official...
Right. Just want to make sure.
Yep.
That's our fact checker right there.
Yoda has always been shrouded in mystery. Yaddle was in the prequels, and she's the only other, you know...
So it's a creature character. That... The creature in the cradle is what essentially is...
It's a baby Yoda.
Is it? Is Would you call it a baby?
For as long-lived as he is, I would say
If
yes,
they're saying it's
baby.
50 years old and Yoda lived to 800, you know, that's right there, like, 1/16th of the life. So maybe a child. How about that?
Yeah, well, he's babyish, you know.
He's not babyish, though, because look how tall Yoda is. Now, imagine if you're... That's an adult. Imagine what a child version of that would
look
like. Well,
yeah, but every species grows at its own rate.
Now you're just being contrarian.
Yes, but it's a baby child. It's a small young Yoda creature.
So what makes this interesting is that the Empire wants this individual. So they knew it existed. This is a world where right now, let's see, if it's 5 years after Return of the Jedi, we'll assume that. Right now, Leia and Han have a kid that's at least a couple years old at this point. So the Jedi Order is maybe in the infant and initial stages of being rebuilt.
Yeah, I'm sure Luke is putting together his 5-year plan for the new Jedi Order. Probably at this point, the Republic itself is very much in its infancy, much like this young Yoda. You know, like I'm sure it's up and running, but it's probably nowhere near the strength it needs to be to be in charge of the entire universe.
Part of it is just because the Death Star was destroyed doesn't mean the Empire stops being the Empire just like that.
Yeah, and I'd be curious to see the official end of the Empire was at the Battle of Jakku, which is why you see, all sorts of destroyed Star Destroyers and Rebel ships there. But I don't recall off the top of my head when that took place based on when this is, if that's after this or if this was before that or when it is. It was definitely like on the decline, but I think
the Battle of Jakku took place maybe, I think it was 2 or 3 years after the Battle of Endor.
Yeah, and I know it's right around there, so that could be the end of this, and this might be, some guy trying to jumpstart the Empire starting over again.
Well, and maybe the best way to think of it is, like, just because Germany lost World War II doesn't mean Nazis stopped being Nazis. Yeah. They just basically had to operate underground or had to work their plans, in smaller ways. And
yes, exactly.
Yeah. Let's see. You're looking up. You don't want to talk to our fact checker.
I am. Da, da, da. The year 5 ABY, which is what, after the Battle of Yavin?
Which is 3 years. It's 2 years.
Only a year and 4 days after the Battle of Endor. So yeah, the Battle of Jakku is well behind us at this point.
Yep.
And I'm kind of surprised those stormtroopers are still wearing like their armor, but they're loyalists.
Well, that's just it, is that you have people that believe in something and say, hey, just because, the parent organization isn't around doesn't mean that we're not going to still, believe in the organization. I mean, it's like the equivalent of Klansmen that have their, white robes hiding in a closet. Because, hey, we have to now work in the shadows doesn't mean we're not working. We're just not advertising anymore as much.
Yes, exactly.
So, yeah, interesting ending right there where it seems to imply, Mandalorian shoots and kills IG-11 and, to save, the Yoda-like infant creature.
Yeah, and I'm sure he'll be carrying it around and figuring out, I highly doubt he's going to take it back to the Empire, but we'll see, I suppose, in the next episode, which comes out in a few days here, what he ends up doing with it.
Yes, I mean, episode-wise, the second episode comes out on Friday, which is 2 days from when we're recording this, and then subsequent episodes will be every 7 days, with the exception there'll be a break in the episodes where one will come out a little sooner because it corresponds to the week that... Rise of Skywalker comes out. They didn't want to have them competing against each other.
Yeah, can't blame them.
Right. So, I would say this. Rick and Morty, out of a 1 to 5 scale, how would you rate it?
3.
I'd say 3.5, 4.
Yeah,
4.
I was going to say maybe 3.5. I wouldn't go quite as high as 4, but 3.5 maybe is probably right where it, better than average, but not by much.
Right. I would give it up in that 4 range or so, because I feel a lot of times Rick and Morty is operating that 4.5 range most of the time. They're always doing strong, and I think that's a hard thing because they've always been so strong before, and now you have 5 seasons ahead. You have to maybe recalibrate that. Maybe this is what is going to be the norm for maybe a good episode now.
Yeah, which wouldn't be bad. I mean, it's still better than a lot of what's out there.
Right. Mandalorian?
I hesitate to give it a 5. I'd say for me a 4.5 maybe. It was pretty solid. Like, I
would say 4.5. I think they did a great job of establishing the new universe or new aspect of the Star Wars universe itself. People have quibbles or problems about it. Why? Just enjoy it.
Yeah, and I haven't had a chance to, like, dive online and see what the reviews have been like. The stuff I have seen has been very positive, but...
Most of the complaints I've seen is, like, the whole middle learning to ride a blarg scene and that whole middle part right there. And
yeah, that's 2 minutes. It's okay, guys. You know?
Right. And, you know, I think that's the other thing that you have to calibrate as well, is that this isn't a movie. This is going to be an ongoing series.
Yeah.
So I think that's the other trick. And if you've watched or been accustomed to Clone Wars, all right, maybe it's going to be easier to see how the pacing of it goes, but...
Yeah, and I think one thing that'll be interesting, like I touched on before, was that this was 40 minutes long, and I think that's almost encouraging that they didn't feel like they had to make it 55 minutes or something. I think, you know, like this episode's maybe 40 minutes, maybe next week's will be 50. Like, if they're willing to let the episode be the length that it needs to be, that the director and, you know, Jon Favreau as the showrunner kind of feel like it's, you know, the story they want to tell, like, you know, they're not beholden to. They have
I thought
to be.
Filoni was the showrunner, and I thought Favreau was the writer, and...
No, Favreau, I believe, is the showrunner. Filoni's just directing. I don't think he has anything else to do besides directing.
Why do I feel it's flipped? I don't know.
Who knows?
Somebody just write a comment and say, blah, blah, blah.
Stuff and things. You're wrong.
Right.
That's what I'm here for.
But two strong premieres in a course of a week, and feel good about it. It's good time to be a geek. There's a lot of great things coming out. Hell, lose yourself in Disney Plus for at least a good week in itself.
You easily could for a good month or so. Like, just, you know, put on some DuckTales, watch some, you know, I don't know, Black Hole, which is probably what we'll do pretty soon here. Foreshadow.
I watched it, and my oldest son's like, "What are you watching?" I'm watching The Black Hole. And he's like, "What?" And I'm like, he's like, "It's an old movie, son." And he's like, "It looks old."
Yes, it does. Yeah.
So thank you for joining us. Again, this is your host, Mike Spraggle.
And this is John Lundquist.
We'll tune in to our next episode where we talk the first few episodes of HBO's Watchmen series.
Yes.
Which means you have to recommend something entirely different for that episode.
Yes, because I don't know what's going to be the next episode, but I have something already lined up. Have a good one, everybody.
All right. Thank you, everyone.